If you're in or around education, you hear the word coherence a lot. It's even been joked with me that it's the word du jour, the buzzword that everyone in education is saying right now.
Coherence, a noun. The quality or state of systematic or logical connection. When the parts of something fit together in a natural way so that they form a united whole.
As I've been working on this podcast, I hear people say it all the time. Even in our prior episode at Inglewood, we even talk about how the intensive assistance model unfolds coherence. Personally, and somewhat ironically, I've been studying the notion of coherence and incoherence for the last 8-ish years, mostly through the work of a quantum theorist named David Bohm. That's B-O-H-M. He talks a lot about coherence in his work and the necessity for us to operate in coherence. But he points out that we have a problem. The human brain, thought itself, is actually incoherent. One thing he said is that incoherent species do not survive. And we could look at education and the education system, schools, like a species. If they are incoherent, how do they survive? We may be in pursuit of discovering coherence. We may say that we need to find coherence. But then what's actually happening behind the scenes, in our brains and thoughts and egos, is that we're constantly acting incoherently, undermining coherence all the time. In a sense, coherence becomes an ideal that we attempt to achieve, a goal. We say that we desire coherence in our educational systems and among our teachers and in our thinking. But if thought itself is incoherent, how do we achieve actual coherence? Our own thoughts are constantly defending our own actions, even against evidence and data that our thoughts are wrong.
A lot of times, you know, when you're teaching, you're on your little island.
And when we are confused or worried or stressed or angry,
how come this student didn't get it? I taught the heck out of it.
We are acting incoherently. And then thought is creating all kinds of made-up stories about other people.
Gosh darn it, they're so lazy.
Stories about what's possible for our students to learn based on how they look. Endless assumptions. So our own brains are acting incoherently all the time, doing it without us even noticing. All the while, saying that we need and desire coherence. It's a paradox. So what do we do?
I've gone through periods of, I can't do this anymore. There's often times where our walls are just lined with boxes of new curriculum, and that's incredibly overwhelming. And it's all supposed to be the next best thing.
The way David Bohm saw it was that instead of creating an ideal of coherence, a projection of coherence, that we should be working to identify the incoherence. If we can identify where we are acting incoherent, and then negate that incoherence, meaning that we come together in relationship. We look at it, we talk about it, we realize that what we are doing doesn't make sense, and we change it. Well then, by default, there is now more coherence. When we get rid of incoherence, there is more coherence present. And that is what the intensive assistance model and the four questions do. They help teachers learn how to come together, learn to truly collaborate and start identifying incoherence in themselves and in our old systems of education. They are asking themselves, does what we are doing make any sense? And if it doesn't, why are we doing it? Welcome to Rising from the Margins, Episode 4, Chapter 3, Harkness Elementary in Sacramento, California. I'm your host, Byron Watkins. We're in the state's capital, at Harkness Elementary in the Sac City School District, one of the oldest districts west of the Mississippi. Being so close to the capital, Sac City has a unique set of political challenges that add a lot of noise to the school sites. And Harkness has felt it. As a low-performing school, they recently sought out external help from CCEE.
Prior to coming here, I had thought that I taught at small schools. Harkness is tiny, and it is definitely a close-knit group.
That's the voice of 28-year teacher Miss Yerby of Harkness's reading intervention and ELD instruction.
The teachers that are here have been here for a long time. We have several teachers who have been here their whole teaching career.
And that's 23-year teacher Ms. Samuels of the kindergarten class. Here's Principal Sheline. This will be her third year at Harkness Elementary.
I don't know, you know, what kind of sense you got about it today, but every grown-up here is very invested in this place, and most of the teachers have taught here for decades.
I've been at Harkness for 22 years.
I have been at Harkness Elementary School for 26 years.
Been in the district since 2001.
The people who are here doing the work every day, you know, wow. Despite lots of other things that are happening.
We tout the fact that we're like a family. It's one of the reasons that I keep coming, you know, back to the school every year.
And as a family, what Harkness is doing is putting their family business on the table and addressing it head on with the help of CCEE through its intensive assistance model.
I would say most teachers everywhere are well-intentioned, hard-working individuals. The ones who are getting the great scores, the ones who are not getting the great scores, they're all well-intentioned and hard-working.
Here's the voice of Sac City's Chief Academic Officer, Yvonne Wright. She comes with over 30 years of experience in education. As a former teacher, principal, and director of schools, she's also a former Sac City student.
The intensive assistance model, the reason why that I believe that this is such a powerful and important model is because I think for true transformation to take place at a school, that it must be a model that is happening as close to the classroom as possible. The other thing I think, it must start with teachers. It's not something that happens from the district office, then something that comes down to teachers.
You see things come and go.
Here's the voice of Harkness's second grade teacher, Ms. Martinez.
For 22 years, I've seen things come and go here at Harkness through different principals that they say, oh, let's do this, let's do that.
When we get into like the politics of things, I think sometimes we have a tendency to try things and sometimes we don't see them through. So you might do best practices. I'll throw that out there because some people will probably be like, ah, you know, we had best practices. We had Standards Plus, which is out of Southern California. We bought a license for it. We used it for about 2-3 years and then it was on to the next thing.
Without a way to focus and move from blurry to clear, you get lost in the weeds of all the stuff, especially things that are outside of your control. You know, the noise that can be at the district level or that can be at the site level, but it can also be at the home level or there's a lot going on, right? Because educators are humans too. You know, when you can quiet that noise with something that gives you really clear vision, you're going to achieve outcomes you've never achieved before when it's clearer. And those four questions, right, they adjust that lens.
If you recall from previous episodes, the four essential questions are part of CCE's model that give shape to each and every PLC meeting. Question one, what do we want students to learn? Two, how do we know if they've learned it? Three, what are we going to do if students have learned it? And four, what are we going to do if they haven't learned it?
What do we want students to know and be able to do? We want them to know our food policy. And we're going through those questions for many things, not even just academic things, right? Because it makes sense and it's very much the language of our school.
These questions, by their very function, put you in a place of I don't know. By asking the question, it forces you to look at the problem. But being in a vulnerable place of I don't know can be scary for a lot of people. But that is where the safety of the collaboration comes in. Teachers all working together to figure it out.
If it's a question that doesn't fit within those, or a problem or a need or a learning that doesn't fit within those four questions, it's not work worth doing.
Here's the voice of Mr. Peters of Harkness's 5th and 6th grade.
I've been at the same school for 26 years. I've seen a lot of staff meetings. I've dreaded our staff meetings, to be honest with you. I've looked forward to my small group teacher meetings because I knew that we were, if we're just being transparent, I knew that we were going to be able to catch up and talk about our families and how are the kids and how old are they now? Wow, it's unbelievable. And tell me about that trip. In the last 15 minutes, we would get to instruction, which would be really great for those 15 minutes. But You know, when time was up, time was up.
People, maybe they felt they weren't quite there yet, where they still had to pick up some stuff for our professional learning community, that because it's still in progress.
Now we have PLC meetings every single week, and we spend the first 2 to 3 minutes sharing out good things, catching up, and then our timekeeper is pretty strict on the time. And at that point, when we've all shared out, then it's time to do the deep dive and get into student data and answer those kind of heavy lifting questions of, okay, we've done this for our students. Are they getting it? Okay, if they're not getting it, what are we going to do? And if they are getting it, how the heck are we going to challenge them and differentiate at a higher level to be able to keep that learning going so we don't extinguish that flame for education?
So there has been a time where it can be difficult, where it's like, hey, you need to do this, let's do this, let's do this. And they might feel a little bit of pressure. That is something that we would have to work on. You see my kids, I see your kids. It's a we thing. It's not my kids, your kids.
And we know we're on the right path and we're doing right by kids instead of doing just right by ourselves like we've done in the past.
The most important part of this work is that it's we and not I. And the culture of teaching is generally, I am doing this with my class. My students need this. But we very much transitioned to we and our. And I hear that every time I walk into a PLT, I see it every time I read one of their agendas, and it's no longer Miss Martinez being the only person who has any accountability for the second graders moving up a performance band in reading, right? That exchange and this collaboration moves from I to we, and then the ownership of what is happening in all the parts of every classroom is becoming much more coherent.
This kind of, not forcing us, but kind of just brings us to that professionalism point of like, I know what you're doing, you know what I'm doing, we're collaborating, and then we're looking at, you know, alignment across, you know, 3-4 grade levels. Like, well, how does this look in kinder? How does it look in first? How does it look in second? So we kind of know where we're going, and that's just part of good teaching.
We often talk about how it's really important that we are, when we're faced with a hard conversation we have to have, you know, asking ourselves, is this just an uncomfortable conversation or is it unreasonable? And 9 times out of 10, it's just really uncomfortable and we have to have it. And bit by bit, our culture is changing to be a place where teachers are able to do that with each other and still feel safe and supported.
When you feel unclear, and you're going home trying to solve a problem that you don't know how to solve and you feel like you're doing it alone, mm-hmm. The way I look at it is it's not that I'm expending more energy. I'm just, like, if I only have 100 BTUs of energy, I'm wasting 75 of it thinking about a problem that could be solved with just a little bit of collaboration.
And I can't say, I don't want to say I've not been focused, because that sounds kind of funny, over 23 years, but I feel like I'm more focused.
You feel like you're doing what you're supposed to be doing. I made this commitment to these students and I've made this commitment to this profession, but you cannot change what you cannot change.
And while the teachers say it takes a lot of work,
it takes a while to get used to. It is exhausting, but it's exhausting in a very productive way.
What you don't hear them saying is that they don't like the work.
Teacher clarity has such a high effect size on student learning and outcomes. And clarity is strong here at Harkness and getting stronger every day. Just the clarity on the standards, the essential standards alone.
We focus on our essential standards.
The essential standards.
Standards that we deemed essential.
Essential standards are helping to create meaning. Remember, the essential standards are laser-focused teaching for grade-specific standards within each content area in order to be prepared to enter the next grade level.
Teachers are so clear about what the standards mean in a way that they might not have been before this deep dive into essential standards.
Teachers teach differently, but the standards really drive instruction. The essential standards drive what should be taught.
I'll be honest with you, I'm very data-driven. I like knowing what to teach. We have the curriculum, we have whatever the district gives us, but we focus on our essential standards that we created together, and we try to be very cohesive.
Back at the start of this year, and standards that we deemed essential last year, were they still essential? And the answer is some of them were. But until we took the framework and the blueprints and analyzed from grade level to grade level, where fourth sat down with fifth and we sat down with sixth, and we wanted to make sure that not only were the standards that we were deeming essential bleeding through all of the grade levels, but were those also going to be essential testing standards through CASP, through the SBAC test at the end of the year? Because that's one of the major indicators of how the students have done.
This is actually really cool what Mr. Peters is pointing to here. It's not that just because we figured out essential standards last year that we got it right. They are asking, is there anything incoherent in what we already decided? Is there more to see? There may be more we can change. This is a true pursuit of saying, we desire coherence. That's the thing about life. There's always more to see, no matter what we think we may know.
Because we are focused on the fundamentals, and we've taken out all the flowering. I mean, it's not the most beautiful education in the sense that, you know, it's not projects all over the rooms and such, but the teaching we are doing reaches the kids, and it's palatable, it's understandable, and they can use it immediately. So it's the true nutrition of education, I guess.
We had a conversation in the academic office just Monday, and we were talking about ninth grade math and students entering ninth grade and not ready for integrated math. And do we develop another math course for them? So we were talking about it as if it was a ninth grade math problem instead of, well, maybe we should think about middle school. And I said, no, maybe we should be thinking about what happens K through ninth grade, like what happens prior to that. So it is an instructional issue in mathematics from K all the way to ninth grade. So should we provide some focus to what's happening with the current, you know, students who are going to be matriculating to ninth grade? Yes. But our bigger issue is instruction K through eighth, so that students will be successful when they get to ninth grade. This model is, I would say, it's easy to implement, but it's not easy to implement. It's intensive and it's an investment. It takes time to do it right.
We're changing a system that we slot into. It's not just me slotting into a system being told what to do. We're seeing that, oh, all of us fit together and that each teacher is participatory. Every grade bleeds into the next.
Yes.
And you're starting to participate in what's actually happening and discussing it in real time.
I've reached a point in my career after like 23 something years where I feel very confident. Like I feel like I know what I'm doing. I feel like I could go out and like I could really talk about what we're doing here and how we really have seen so much growth, like with our kids and even with ourselves, but really just with our students.
My job feels so much more rewarding than it has in the past. When you have a class of 32 students and you can't meet the needs of every single student and you're not moving kids around and you're sitting in at lunch trying to help kids and you're asking kids to stay after and you're calling parents and you're asking for their help and support, there's so much out of your control and you're worked to the bones. By rotating the kids, figuring out exactly what they need, and moving the kids where they need to be and focusing on their needs, we're actually making a difference in their learning.
Again, Harkness's second grade teacher, Ms. Martinez.
You can't control everything. So what can you control? That's the only thing what you need to worry about. Can you control kids coming in late all the time or kids being absent all the time? No. Can you try to get them here on time? Can you keep talking to the parents about it? Yes, but that's still out of our control.
When schools say, everything we do is for the student, all of the decisions we make are for the benefit of our students, this sounds great, and any school would say this, but this statement can also allow incoherence to operate unseen, because we can use the line to justify any action we take, no matter what the outcome really tells us. We've identified that in this episode, right? Sean sharing candidly that they would talk about family, share about their lives, and not end up talking about the students' needs. But yet they were probably saying and believing at the time, everything we do is for the students. But all the while they were struggling in their classrooms, maybe trying to figure out how to know if kids were learning things, what to teach, and if the students aren't getting it, what do I do? All of these incoherent thoughts that are not leading to any kind of coherence.
If a teacher says, I don't understand why kids are coming into my grade less and less prepared, if we're being honest, it's kind of a silly question.
It is. We know exactly why they aren't.
Right, yeah. Because if I also have never, ever spoken to the teacher, ever collaborated in any meaningful way with the teacher in the grade before me and the grade before that, or I don't see myself as part of a continuum, well, then, of course, things are going to be incoherent.
Yes, and collaborating, talking to each other, and talking about the real students, knowing the students, saves so much energy and time. Just, I need to get to know this kid. I need 3 months to figure out how this child operates, how this child learns, how this... No, we should know when they walk in the door because we have discussed their strengths and challenges. We know these kids. These kids are our kids. We've met this child. We've worked with this child. It should be seamless. We are under... Not, you know, say under one roof, but we're not one building. So we're under one small area. We need to look at every student as all of our students, and we know them. And that comes from teachers communicating with each other and working together and planning together. These kids are relying on us for that.
I had LASIK maybe 10 years ago, surgery on my eyes. And it provided so much clarity for my eyes. I was able to see crystal clear for a couple of years. But I didn't know that it was going to regress, and they were going to, from that point on, they were going to get worse. But when I went in to get fitted for my glasses this past year, and he did the little clicking test and, you know, tell me when it becomes clear, and it became clear. That's the best analogy I can kind of throw out is I've always had eyes that work. I've always been a good teacher. Listen, I'm pretty humorous, at least I think so. I lived in the neighborhood. I lived about a mile from here up until I was 10, 11 years old. I bleed green. Harkness, our school color is green, so I bleed this color. But now that I've had my optometrist click the machine and make it a little more clear for my analogy for teaching, it's really hard to go back to impaired vision. If that makes sense. So the eyes that they functioned pretty darn well for the first, you know, 23, 24 years, I've kind of seen a different way. And I have clarity now in my teaching. And I know a clear road that I need to be on.
This isn't a new thing. This is good teaching. It's not new. We're just using good teaching strategies, not a new program. We're not teaching them anything new. We have stripped away the standards to the essentials. What do they need? What is most beneficial? What is going to benefit them in the next grade level the most? And those are the standards we focus on.
The school site is underperforming, and then people start looking for answers. And those in charge then demand answers from those below them. And then those below them demand answers from those below them. And then we need a solution, because we don't realize that we've been treating the school incoherently. So we go looking for fancy acronyms, magic bullet curriculums, to try and solve the problems. But what these teachers are sharing with us, what it shows us, is that we don't need all those acronyms, all those shiny objects, because they're just more noise, more distraction. And they will never really work because they never address the incoherence that is operating at the center of all of this. What it is also showing us is that we don't need to start at the top. We need to start at the thing closest to the center, closest to the kids, closest to the cultures and communities that each school site serves. We need to start at the teachers. We need to empower them with training and professional development that teaches them about data and how to use it. How to communicate and collaborate effectively, how to be vulnerable and open with each other about the work they are doing, When we do this kind of work, the coherence of the whole school begins to change.
This particular work is the work. And if the other acronyms and things that come into our world don't fit into this work, we're not doing them.
More from Mr. Peters.
I've met no resistance at all, whatsoever, with my counterparts in making sure that our time is structured, that we stop pointing the finger at students and saying, I taught the heck out of it, they didn't learn it, it's on them, or what situations they're bringing, or their lack of effort, or gosh darn it, they're so lazy. We're not having those conversations. It's more introspective in, okay, they didn't get it. What can I do to ensure that they get it? And how can I find time in my day to make sure that I spend with them one-on-one? Because I'm telling you right now, when you spend time with the student and that sound emanates from them, that's that, oh, and they get that look in their eyes where the light goes off and they finally got it. And you took the time to spend that time instead of sweeping it under the rug. That's the drip right there, brother. That's what it's all about.
That's the biggest shift I've seen here is the, well, I can't control that because blah, blah, blah. Well, they blah, 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 blah. All the complaining about all that we can't control has stopped. It has stopped. And it stopped early on this year. And it was so beautiful to not hear anymore.
I think the nice thing about this is it's driven by data.
The data.
Most important incentives of this work is the data.
Using constant data to see if what the teachers are doing is actually working with the students. Data allows them to see in real time what they need to keep doing or to change. It shows them where they may be incoherent.
You're seeing and monitoring every single student's progress immediately.
More from Ms. Yerby.
And addressing when they don't learn it immediately. Very intentional teaching.
Again, kindergarten teacher Ms. Samuels.
And the first grade team let us know that they saw a huge difference with this group coming in terms of their skill levels. So, you know, we were like, okay, let's do it again. And this time we're better than last year, so.
Once again, Principal Sheline.
Seeing this is so motivating to me, gives me so much meaning. And you could hear it in our teachers, right? When they were talking about the movement.
So I got to attend the 4th, 5th, and 6th grades combined PLC meeting on the day I was recording. And in the room that they were meeting, I need to paint a picture for you. It's a little difficult to describe, so hopefully you can see what's about to happen, because it's pretty significant and it's pretty cool. So on a bulletin board, a large bulletin board. They have rows of 3x5 cards. A row for 4th, a row for 5th, and a row for 6th grade. Every student in every grade is represented on a color-coded card. Red, yellow, green, and blue. And those color-coded cards are in 4 columns. Green means on grade level, blue is above. The wall is a visual data wall, and it shows where each student scored against grade level on their DIBLS at the beginning of this school year. For those who don't know, DIBLS stands for Dynamic Indicators of Basic Early Literacy Skills. They are tests that help teachers and schools determine how students are performing on important reading skills. The teachers have pulled the cards off the wall and added the kids' recent mid-year DIBLS scores to the cards and are now going to place them back up on the wall.
All right, you guys, you might need a drum roll. We have potential for a double band jumper here.
By having all the kids on colored cards,
Aiden went up 67 points.
They can see in visual form how their kids have improved or not improved over the course of the year.
She went from red to green.
Guys. Look at that. Now you can visually see it now. Give me goosebumps.
There are reds now in the green column, yellows and greens in the blue column.
Well, let's get more. I want more goosebumps. Come on.
She jumped one band and went straight to being at grade level.
Even if a kid stayed in the same color, the rigor for the test has increased and the student needed more points to stay in that column. I asked Mr. Peters what seeing the results on the wall will allow them to do.
It enables us to speak to that student with a deeper knowledge of where they actually are and increase that confidence in themselves.
tangible, visible results of the hard work the teachers have been doing to identify incoherence, not blame others, and create new meaning for themselves and their students.
One student dropped a band in sixth grade, went from blue to green. Every single other student either stayed or jumped a band. We had 20 in sixth grade jump a band. It's beyond eye-opening. It's almost emotional. That's what it's all about.
And our teachers have needed a win, and they got it today, and our students are going to get it too. It's huge. It's a huge piece of this work. Like, yeah, the per diem pay is great, and I mean, teachers, right? I can't say it enough. They deserve all the money in the world. They totally do. But the meaning piece doesn't come from that, right? The meaning piece comes from seeing kids achieve at high levels, and we are seeing that here.
Chief Academic Officer Yvonne Wright.
And that's when you see the culture begin to shift in your school, and that teachers are asking for opportunities.
Learning absolutely is continuous.
They're seeking them.
We as teachers need to keep honing our craft.
And that's when you know that opportunities for students are going to open up.
I'm so much better than I was last year. And 5 years ago, I wasn't as good as I am now. And I can't wait to see how I am in 5 years and 8 years, but not nine, because I might retire after 8 years. So I think it's important for us teachers to get better every single day with our students, and then for them to see that, you know what, my teacher's learning and being better for me as well. We're all learning, and it's continuous, and it shouldn't stop just because I have a degree.
It's interesting because Ms. Nguyen, a couple weeks ago, we were meeting with one of our coaches, and she just said, I'll never be the same. I'm changed forever. And that comment came after we were talking about the sustainability of this work and what, you know, happens if leadership changes. And one of the teachers said, well, you know, if Sarah leaves now, you know, it probably would fizzle out, but if give it another year, and I bet we could sustain it. And that was when Emily said, I'll never be different. I will always be this teacher. And, you know, what we helped her understand is that we need every teacher to feel that way, which I think we'll get there. But then once we've gotten there, this instructional ship will run itself. And that will be when we've really figured it out, when I'm not even needed in that portion of the school.
In a sense, it's like if you strip it all away, it's kind of simple in the sense you're just like actually communicating and dialoguing and doing it open.
Who would have thought, Byron? Isn't that the weirdest thing when we actually break down the walls and we don't have these islands of greatness, I like to say, in a sea of mediocrity?
Because I've been teaching for a long time, and man, there's been times when you just don't even share at all. It's like, but why not? Why have we not been sharing?
This is just a process for good collaboration, communication, dialogue, leadership. It is a process that allows me as a teacher to feel safe and vulnerable and truly supported by my colleagues, and to realize my own participation in creating the problems of our school.
I'm really seeing more collaborative work in their classrooms, and I just wonder, is this experience they're having with each other and the learning that they're experiencing with each other helping them see that those collaborative experiences for students are likely going to be just as powerful too? And that's a shift I've seen since we've started this work, especially in some classes where, you know, when I first started here, students were very much seated in rows, not collaborating, not talking, not working in groups. And now I feel like I go into those classrooms and those kids are almost always in groups.
I have my little second graders, and they're like, yes, I know why I'm going. I need to work on my sounds, or I need to do this. Oh, yeah, I forgot my period. So they're already understanding. And I tell them all the time, let's just be honest. You know, we have a little class discussion because we're a little community also in our little class, and they want to help each other. I had two little girls actually today, like, they had the little reading books next to each other, and they're like, oh, no, this word is this. And they were giving each other high fives. They already know what they need to improve on. So it was like, you know, I like that they're more focused. I think what they have more clarity. Teachers have more clarity. The students have more clarity.
A lot of this stuff is really, like you said, you strip it away. It's just good teaching. It's good teaching. It's part of our profession. You know, we should be in these meetings focused. We should be looking at student data. We should be concerned about our direct instruction. And it works across everything. It's kind of that kind of like that backbone where you can kind of build, or kind of like a foundation that you can build from.
We're constantly informing ourselves of what progress that we're making. So it's not like at the end of the year, we're gonna have this summative. Oops, we didn't make it, because we're checking along the way. And hopefully we're improving student learning because of this.
If the data shows that they are making progress and they're making progress to meet the standards, it's a proof to continue. We have a staff that puts in the time. I'll be honest, sometimes I worry that once we don't get the extra funding, how would it continue? I'm hoping it continues, because I've been here, like I said, 22 years and I really like this. But sometimes it's okay, right now we're getting paid for our time. When the money stops, will that change? That I don't know.
That this is the way, this is the truth, this is the truth. This is the path that we need to be on, because it's working. It really is.
We say that we want coherence, but then we allow our classrooms to be separate, our teachers not to talk. If we don't allow leadership to unfold from the teachers, well then, incoherence is now the operational ground of the school site. And if that is true, then it doesn't matter how much we say the word coherence, or how much we say everything we do is for the student, we will always be incoherent.
You know, initially it is a little like, a little overwhelming. It is, because you're like, oh, another meeting, another one. But, you know, after a year and a half in it, it's beneficial. It has been really beneficial for us, and really beneficial for our school, but also beneficial for our kids, which is of the most importance, which is why we're all here anyway. They're the best. They're the best.
Imagine our system the way we want it to be. What would it take?
Thank you for listening. This series was brought to you by CCEE, the California Collaborative for Educational Excellence, whose mission is to help transform public education so that every student is left inspired and prepared to thrive as their best self in the world. If you would like to learn more about CCEE, log on to ccee-ca.org. Rising from the Margins was written and produced by Winsong Productions, with additional production support by Parsec Education. And then stay tuned for the next episode, where we explore Newground, a small school district who has expanded the intensive assistance model to every school in the district. And they're not only seeing some pretty incredible results, they're also questioning some traditions of teaching that are almost untouchable. We hope you'll join us.